Welcome to Legal News and Review, recipient of the Florida Bar Award of Excellence. Legal News and Review, the only real problem solver radio program using the law, with your moderator, Philip Bell, and hosts and legal panel attorney, Gary Singer, chair of the Broward County Bar Association's Real Property Section. Gary Singer is board certified in real estate law and a syndicated columnist from the Sun Sentinel. He is an expert in his field of practice. Now, here's your moderator, Philip Bell.
On the docket today.
On the docket for today's broadcast, Monster Cable and Hanson Beverage think that they should own the rights to the word monster. And get this, T-Mobile seeks and they want an action against anyone who dares use the color magenta. And Twitter loses ownership of the trademark on the word tweet. Facebook owns the trademark word face. But our president, Donald Trump, failed to trademark his catchphrase, "You're filed." Fired.
That's probably why.
That's true, too. Today, from the Keyes Law Firm, is founder James Key III. That he practices intellectual property law, and he'll be giving us the 411 on how to protect our intellectual property rights. But first, I'd like to welcome our legal panel host for the last 5 years, Gary Singer.
It's been 5 years, hasn't it?
It has been.
Yeah, I like that. You added that in. That's a lot of shows, Phil. Yeah, welcome. Thanks for having me.
Well, you were sentenced to 10 years.
It's so been a fun week, 5 to 10.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll get off with good behavior. That ain't going
to
happen.
Yep. As always, I'm happy to welcome our listeners on 96.9, 103.9, and those are FM, and 740 AM, and our national listeners on iHeart, TuneIn, and iRadio Now. You can actually watch the production of Legal News and Review and see past shows. All you need to do is Google Facebook, Legal News and Review, and we come right up. And
you
thank you for those emails.
People go on Facebook to learn just how pretty I am. It's true.
Well, you did lose a lot of weight.
I did.
Today, we're producing the program live at the law firm of Kelly Ustahl in their mock courtroom. People do ask me about Kelly Ustahl, and I let them know it's a law firm that is committed to helping people seek justice. If you've been severely injured because of negligence of someone else, you need justice, and you could go to justiceforall.com. It's just as simple as going to justiceforall.com. James Keyes, welcome to Legal News and Review.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
It's good to see you again. You were here 2 years ago.
Yes. Yeah, it was such a great time. We had to do it again.
Absolutely.
Yeah, glad to have you back.
Yeah, thank you.
James, not only are you a registered patent attorney, but you have a technical background in computer sciences, systems, development, and management. People have heard the term patent trolls. The Supreme Court is consistently ruling against patent trolls. James, please explain, what the heck is a patent troll?
Well, a patent troll is not someone who stands under a bridge and hurls insults or other things.
That's scary.
Well, I can't get my hair right to do it.
But what a patent troll is, in more technical parlance, it would be a non-practicing entity. To get a patent, you don't have to actually have a product on sale or be selling something or importing something. It does give you the right, though. A patent gives you the right to exclude other people from making, selling, or importing something.
Right.
And so what a patent troll is, or a non-practicing entity oftentimes, is a person or a company that does not make a product. They don't build anything. They don't make anything. But they have a patent on something. They've applied for a patent. They were granted that patent. And now they're seeking to enforce it against other people that are. Now, patent trolls is a clever way to term it, but a lot of times the patent troll will be the individual inventor who didn't have the money to actually make the product, but they came up with the idea and maybe a big company took it and they're trying to go after the big company. Now, other times it's not that. Other times
can they do that?
Well, it happens.
Like in good faith?
No, it's in bad faith.
If they came up with the idea and they just weren't able to develop it, someone steals it, they can sue.
If they can get a patent. If they can get a patent, you come up with the idea, you apply for a patent, and then you try to get people to manufacture it. And then sometimes when you're trying to get people to manufacture it or to license it from you, they just say, well, forget you. We'll just do it ourselves. Come get us.
That sounds like an honest suit, not a troll
suit.
It is.
Well, but when you're Microsoft and Google, you want to loop those guys in with the guys who are actually the bad faith actors who are just applying for patents by en masse and trying to get a patent on things that are not much different from what people are doing so they can jump in and sue them and try to force a settlement. So there are bad faith actors.
Yeah, of course.
You know, but it's a more nuanced point, you know, when you're looking at sometimes that's the guy in his garage, and then sometimes it's somebody in bad faith.
That leads me to a question about getting a patent. Can you just go and apply for mass patents like that?
If you have the resources to, and you actually have come up with the inventions to warrant it, then yes, you know, you can file. You don't have to have a working prototype to file a patent application. What you have to do is to be able to explain how it works and to lay out what it is that you want to protect. So if you can do that, if you've developed the product sufficiently to be able to explain how it works sufficient that somebody can read your application and build it, then you can apply for a patent. And if it warrants it, if it's novel and non-obvious, which are the two conditions for patentability, then you can get a patent on that. Irrespective of whether or not you had any success manufacturing, marketing, engineering, any of that stuff, which actually determines your
business.
So
someone's actually looking at it, like it's being reviewed and a lot of them get rejected then.
Yes, yeah, patent examination. There's patent examiners, there's an army of them.
And well, I'm confused about software. Software is a patent? Or is it copyright?
Both come into play. With software, a copyright is something that can protect the actual code, what someone sits down and types, what programmers actually put on the computer, mm-hmm. and also what's called the object code, which is what happens when the machine acts on the source code. But the actual written material that makes the computer do stuff right. can be protected by copyright. What a patent can do is protect what the software does, the process through which it accomplishes some objective or gets from point A to point B. And that doesn't matter the code. And that matters from the standpoint of enforcement because from a copyright, if someone else develops software that does the exact same thing that Microsoft Windows does, but they just code it themselves for hours and hours and hours and hundreds of millions of hours probably, then Microsoft couldn't sue them for copyright infringement because they did not take their actual code. But
gotcha.
From the standpoint of, it, as it relates to the source code. Now, but if they have a patent on what it does, then it doesn't matter how you come up with the code, how you develop the program, what you're doing. If you're practicing what it is that's patented, how you got it does not matter. You can be liable for patent infringement.
Well, so music is copyrighted.
Yes, because copyright deals with expression. And in the same way that a song and lyrics or the music or the cadence can be expression or a book, the story can be expression, in the same way that is, the law considers source code, the what the programmer writes, to be expression in the sense that if you sit 10 programmers down and say, hey, I want you to code a program that does this, this, and this, you'll have 10 different versions of source code, and they may all accomplish the objective. And so in that standpoint, in the same way, if I say, hey, write a book about a whale, somebody might write Moby Dick and somebody might write something, you know, that is 5 pages. And so in the same vein, the source code, the software is copyright, is copyrightable expression. And then in the same way when you deal with music, and that's copyrightable expression.
So how do people get away with, I guess, I don't know what they call it, remixing or covering music and changing it a little bit? Like Vanilla Ice,
Vanilla Ice got dinged
David
for that.
David Bowie and all
and,
that.
And a lot of times people get hit for that, and where if there's, you either have to get a license, which with any right, mm-hmm. When you have the right, whether it could be real property, and you can have
permission
the right, you
use.
Have a lease,
sure.
You know, you have a right to occupy those premises.
We got licenses for property too, yeah.
Exactly, mm-hmm. and then with intellectual property, you can have a license. So oftentimes in the music industry, it's set up so that licensing freely happens to allow further the expression, to allow people to build on other people. Where you get into trouble, though, is when people don't properly attribute and or license the source material that they're going to use. And so when you have the issue with David Bowie, or there are countless issues, you mm-hmm. know, because as with most things, people play on the line, you know, and so they're not staying very safe. They're playing along where, is this infringement, or are they paying them? Okay, well, then that's fine if they have a license, but if they're not licensing it, how close, how similar is this to that the copyrightable expression in the source work?
Well, then let me ask you this. Here in the state of Florida, I can have a company called Apple.
Yes.
And it'll pass the, this all you got to do is send them a check and make sure I'm registered. And I found out that all of a sudden I can't use Apple.
Well, that's not necessarily the case. If you were selling fruit, you could name a company Apple, and you could sell your apples, your Apple all you wanted. But what we're dealing with now is trademark.
But could you call them iApples?
You start the closer you get. But I'll say this: it you could call them a lot of things if you're actually talking about apples.
Gotcha.
Because Apple, the company,
it's how you use the word, not just the word.
Well, in a sense, yes. Because when you're talking about trademark, and that's what we're talking about when we're saying the brand name of a company like Apple, you're talking
about
source identification.
A domain name.
Well, domain names are functional in addition to identifying. Trademarks deal with source identification. You want to identify the source of the products. And actually, it's a right that the public is entitled to. I need to know who I'm doing business with. So if Apple, the company, has a bundle of trademark rights around that term and around their logo and things like that, that will prevent other people from using that in a way that's likely to cause confusion. And in fact, that's the legal standard. Is someone else's use likely to cause confusion? Now, in your example for SunBiz, that's not someone sitting there examining each application for an LLC or a corporation. That's an automated system. So you could name a company Apple, but if you did anything dealing with electronics, you believe you're going to get a demand letter demanding you cease and desist from using that. If you're lucky, they may just come after you in court and demand damages.
Do you write those kind of letters?
Oh, of course, of course.
So let me ask you this. If I hypothetically copyrighted the name Phil Bell, how much would he owe me?
Well, that would be for trademark, because Phil Bell wouldn't be an expression. That's not you taking an idea and expressing it in the way of a book or a song or anything like that. So if you tried to trademark the name Phil Bell, they would reject you and say you're not using the name. One of the qualifications for trademark, how you get the rights, is through use.
Okay.
And so you have to actually be using the trademark, and then you can register the trademark. With trademarks, you're not going to the government asking for rights. You're going to the government and saying, hey, will you register these rights, which makes it easier to...
So you already have the rights.
You already have, when you use a non-descriptive, or I should say a distinctive mark to identify some goods or services, then yes, you acquire what's
called common law rights. So like Be Legal, how we end the show with Be Legal. Right. Even if we hadn't registered it, let's say, that would still be protected?
That would be protected. The limitations on common law protection is that it gives you protection where it's being used.
Well, we're nationwide.
Well, then you would have an argument to be yeah, you would have the argument to say we were nationwide. Now, once you have a registration, the registration confers nationwide rights if you're talking about a federal.
But does it go past that? Let's say, could they start saying Be Legal in Europe?
Your U.S. trademark registration would do nothing for you in Europe. Now, there are treaties that allow you to seek protection.
We still have treaties? I mean,
we still have. Hey, the treaty game in the intellectual property world is big. You know, like most countries are joining in. There's treaties on the patent side.
That's
there's
a good
treaties
thing.
on the patents or the patent and the trademark side that allow you to. Now, you still have to go each place that you want rights in and actually apply for the rights. Now, and some will be bundled together. Europe, there's the European Patent Office, which will allow you to apply for with one application in many areas in Europe and actually be granted a European patent that'll cover you in a lot of places. But generally speaking, it's a tedious process. If you want protection in a certain jurisdiction, you have to go to that jurisdiction and apply. And the treaties just make it so you can reference your U.S. rights and say, hey, I have rights here, and now I'm going to start doing it here, and so I want the rights here.
So let me ask you that. So I patent a gizmo here in the States, and then someone starts making it in, well, what they always do, in China. Could they, even if they're not making them there, what happens if they sell them here against
make,
me?
Make, sell, or import is the restriction on patent infringement. And I'm glad you asked about that, because with patent infringement, if you have a U.S. patent, you can stop people from making, selling, or importing what you have patented in the U.S.
Gotcha.
So they can build it over there, but they can't bring it over here. Once they bring it over here, you got them, and you shut it down. But one interesting thing, let's say you wanted to seek protection in China. You would have to file for rights in China or through international treaties within a year of your U.S. filing.
Okay.
In order to take advantage of U.S. filing. That restriction is a very substantial one internationally, because what you end up, you oftentimes don't know if your product has legs within the first year.
Yeah.
And so you have to start filing applications. And there's consolidated ways to actually file applications and defer that time frame. But ultimately, you need to speak to a patent practitioner as soon as possible if you're interested in international protection. Well, and U.S. protection, because unlike trademarks, patent rights don't accrue automatically. You have to go to the government, apply, and be
granted. There's no common law patent.
There's no common law patent.
Can you, is it limited to products, or can you patent animals or plants?
Well, there is a patent system as far as for plants, and when you get into bioengineering and things like that,
I clone sheep in my free time, and I want to be protected.
Yeah, there are avenues through which those go beyond the utility patent that we hear about the most. There actually are called plant patents. Right. In addition, they're design patents, which protect the ornamental features of something. But living things generally, you cannot patent. But when you start making alterations, there is
legal.
Like
if you breed two plants, make a new apple.
Potentially. Yeah, potentially there would be patent protection for that, depending on there's a lot of nuance in the law there in terms of how different it needs to be from what naturally occurs.
Well, what about 3D printing? How does that play into all this? So if you have a product and people start 3D printing,
you mean like patented, a gun?
Well, like a gun. But that, we could spend a lot of time on that subject.
I know,
and see
we
how
have.
Stupid all these news reports
can
are.
Protect, utility patents can protect products, machines, and things like that. Articles of manufacture, also process. You know, so like a process. So the process of making something. So if you're looking at a 3D printer that can actually make something on site, mm-hmm. You still would, if you have a patent on that device or machine or article or the process of making it, then you would still, that would still be an infringement of your patent.
So now, the instrumentality of making it isn't what's important. It's the fact that that process or
made.
Device is being made.
It's exactly. What and so that may make it a nightmare to enforce. If everyone can print their own infringement and there's no one centralized person who is selling the,
gotcha.
You know, so you
make
can
it really
them.
Hard because you have to get each individual. But
or,
they've
or
done that,
whoever,
like, you know, with the music on the downloading with Napster and all that.
Oh, Napster.
Well, they went to the source, and that's the development that would have to be is, well, who is creating the algorithm that's enabling people
well,
to
they
do
were
this.
Suing people who were downloading, too, if you remember.
Yes. Yeah, I do. That was an interesting time. They were suing people and getting settlements for $2,000 and $3,000, and but really just to make an example,
make
saying,
an
hey,
example.
We're coming after
this.
You.
So two follow-ups. The first one is medicine. Can you patent medicine?
Well, yes, that's actually an interesting question because from a patent practitioner standpoint, I would say that our whole practice of medicine right now is in large part based on the patent system. Drug companies push what they can patent for obvious reasons. If you are allowed to stop other people from making or selling something for 20 years, which is the term of a patent, then you can charge whatever you want. And to the extent that other laws have had to be written and be enacted to prevent people from overcharging on things that they have patents,
sure.
or to force them to license it, even though they have a patent. And normally when you have a patent, you don't have to license anyone. So, yes, you can, and that is a large part of the medical industry right now.
And is there anything that's – I said I had two follow-ups, Phil. Is there anything that's so important – that you can't patent it, like it's too much for the public good that it becomes unpatentable? Like, let's say they invent a true cure for cancer. Could that be denied because it's too important?
No. Social utility or, you know, that's not grounds to deny a patent. And so that would not be the reason. The thinking is the patent system is an incentive system. It's the government
sure.
saying we want people to invest money and try to do things that are very difficult because if they accomplish it, then we're going to give them that 20-year monopoly. And so it wouldn't say, you know, they wouldn't undermine that by saying, hey, if you come up with something really good, then we're not going to have that incentive structure. The thought process is that after the 20 years, then anybody can do it. And that's the way patents work. You know, after 20
gotcha.
Years. It's public. You know, anybody can make it. Now,
there's no way to extend it.
No. And based on trademark law, you cannot name it the same thing. You have to identify it with your own brand. But after the 20 years, it's any for anyone to make, sell, or import.
That's like 2 years left. You can get cheap Viagra.
Why are you looking at me with that? but you know, intellectual property and the laws that protect us. It's a infinite amount of business. I mean, there's the small mom and pops mm-hmm. who should be protected. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the large corporations who know the value of protection. Mm-hmm. But if two different people come up with the same invention, mm-hmm. does the person who had the idea first always have the superior right to patent it?
No. And this actually is a recent change in U.S. law. Now, internationally, they've always operated on the idea that the first person to file a patent application is the only person that can get a patent on an innovation.
It's race notice, just like real estate.
Exactly. And the U.S. used to operate and historically always operated on a first inventor. First to invent is the one. So you could file your application second, and then they'd say, hey, somebody else has an application for something very similar. You know, we're assuming for the purposes of this discussion that that they don't know each other. They didn't get it from one another or anything. Nobody misappropriated it. But and the first inventor could say, well, no, I look at my papers. I've been working on this for 5 years, and I had this back then. And then that person would get the priority. Well, a few years ago, they changed that to come in line with the international standard, which now the U.S. operates. It's a slight modification of first to file, in which it's first inventor to file. So you file, whoever the first to file is the one who is able to get the patent, no one else, as long as you actually were an inventor of it. You can't steal it from somebody and then beat them to the patent office and say, hey, you know, they're out of luck. I beat them to the patent office. And, you know, you actually have to be an inventor to
So why do people mail letters back to themselves with ideas?
Well, that's the old school copyright, you know, the poor man's copyright, where you mail a letter to yourself to show that you came up with an idea. And then in patents, conceivably, that could have helped you under the old first to invent. Huh. But basically, you're using the postmark and sealed envelope as a way to show that something at a certain point in time was in your possession.
Now, people don't want to pay hourly fees to attorneys. Matter of fact, they don't want to pay attorneys at all. But, you know, if you have a trademark or you have a copyright issue or even a patent, trade secret, what have you, you don't work typically on those things. That's not done hourly, is it? It's a flat fee.
No, yeah, my office.
Unless you have to go to court.
Only litigation is what we litigation has to be hourly. There's I've thought about it. There's no, and I know other people have explored
there's
it.
There's just no good way to do litigation. Know,
either
flat fee.
No.
Not any significant litigation.
No, maybe not.
An eviction or
from
something.
But that's not just to protect the attorney. That's also to protect the client.
Yeah.
If you say, hey, you got to pay me this amount, and I'll cover it flat fee, and then you settle it the next day, that's not in the client's interest.
I like well, you got to ask the flat fee after you know you're going to settle it.
But even if you get them what they want, you know, that's still not in their interest. So hourly seems to be, you know, it's the best of the alternatives at this point. For patent work, trademark work, copyright work that's dealing with either the Library of Congress Copyright Office or the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, I can do a good job of anticipating the amount of time it's going to take to do something. Now, it's each engagement, though. It's not you sign up with me and then I take you all the way through 5 years from now, because we don't know what's going to happen at each step. So it'll be to get you from this step to the next step, it'll be this amount. And then I tell you that in advance, and I honor it. You can come back to me in 6 months, and it's the same price for me. And so, yeah, I find that to be a fair way to practice from that standpoint. Everybody knows what to expect. Nobody gets a bill, and they're surprised by it. You know, part of that also is making sure that people agree in writing, you know, or just otherwise affirm that they're on board with what the program is.
What about businesses that have been around for generations? As a matter of fact, Gary Singer bought Gibraltar Title, and Gibraltar Title's been around for how long?
Now, 437 years. Now, they're around since the early 70s.
Since the early 70s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's a big transition now within business where they're changing hands from succession to just outright buying the different businesses. You have to have that protection. And that protection, a lot of our listeners, getting back to the hourly, they don't realize that it's very cost-effective. As a lot of lawyers say, either you pay me now or you pay me a lot later.
A lot, yeah, and with a lot more at risk.
Right.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, that's a lot of times what you're doing is trying to avoid problems before they happen. I'm brought in oftentimes on mergers or asset purchases because they say, hey, is the intellectual property, do we need to make sure that we're getting what we're expecting to be getting here on the intellectual property side? If I buy a company and I'm expecting to utilize or exploit the branding of that company, I need to make sure that what I'm being transferred is, or what's being transferred to me, is going to allow me to accomplish that.
Right.
And the words matter. You know, attorneys, we always have to keep that in mind, and we have to convey that, you know, to our clients, that, hey, words matter. And if you take shortcuts and things like that, then you may end up in a situation where you have a lot more work that needs to be done, and you're doing that work at that time with your rights at stake versus if you would have spent up front and made sure that it was done right in the first place, then those would be things you weren't worried
about.
Now,
you have experience for very large companies.
Yes.
I mean, very large companies and products that we're not going to talk about right now.
Mm-hmm.
So you love, though, the small business. You love the because they could be your best client. They could grow up tremendously.
I feed off of the enthusiasm of my clients. And so, for me, I sought out intellectual property law because, generally speaking, now, when you're dealing with disputes, it's the same no matter what type of law. But for clients of mine who aren't dealing with disputes that are coming to me and saying, hey, I've come up with something, or hey, I want to do something, there's an energy that they bring with them that energizes me. You know, they are trying to conquer the world, you know, or their slice of the world, you know, and so that's something that I'm so happy that I can help them along that way. Now, I don't help on the business side. You know, that's not my role. And I tell them that, hey, you know, what I can do is take care of you and put you in the best possible position on the legal side, on the intellectual property side, but you have to go make this thing fly. You know, they ultimately, demand is what drives everything. But at the same time, once you hit that demand, if you have the intellectual property situation set up straight, then you'll be in a position to better exploit that. And that's what you want. You want to prepare for your success. And so you have the success and you haven't prepared for it, then guess what? There will be copiers and imitators.
Oh, there'll be consequences.
And they're going to chip away at everything you've done. And if you have success and you've prepared, guess what? There will be copiers and imitators, but you'll be better prepared to be able to take care, to protect yourself and to exploit what you've put your hard-earned innovation and work in and to develop.
So real quick, because I know we're running out of time, but if someone gets a letter, you know, the letter, you know. What's the letters that he writes. Yeah, the letters that you write.
Well, they bring them to
and
me,
sometimes
too.
Sometimes you get the letters. So what does someone do?
You have to go to an attorney because people send letters for a lot of things. Sometimes I've gotten letters before where that people are alleging trademark infringement, and then you pull up the actual trademark registration that they have, and in it, the registration, it says, hey, we don't make a claim to this word, and that's the word that we're using. It's like, well, you just are trying to scare these guys. And so, like, I send a letter back, like, look, you can go pound sand. You're like, this is crazy.
Call them pound letters.
And so, you know, you always should go see an attorney, though. I mean, because you have to evaluate what's going on.
All right, so we are getting low on time. How would someone get in hold of you if they have more questions about intellectual property?
KeysLawFirm.com. That is KEYS, like car keys, lawfirm.com. And my name is James Keys III. If you search James Keys, you will find me. And also, of course, and I'm on Facebook, same thing, Keys Law Firm, KEYS.
One of our legal panel hosts last time he was on was Michael Santucci. He co-chairs the intellectual property law for the Broward County. And he said there's a handful of attorneys that he would refer cases to, and you're one of them.
Pleasure having you again, James. Thank you so much for being here, Mr. Keys. Phil, always a pleasure. A special thanks to our staff, crew of thousands. Most importantly, to our listeners, be safe and be legal. And that's copyright.
You've been listening to the award-winning Legal News and Review, recognized by the Florida Bar's Award of Excellence. To contact the legal panel hosts and guests, go to belegalbuzz.com. And to reach Gary Singer, board-certified real estate and syndicated columnist, appearing in 400 media outlets, including the front page of the Money Section every Monday in the Sun Sentinel, from the law firm of Gary M. Singer, PA, call 954-851-1448 for legal news and review. Remember, be legal.